From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the Night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever forevering, forever at my side, the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going? You know, a little interesting today because it's a Thursday, but that's what happens from time to time. You bounce around due to those pesky sports, but glad to be back here another week of Bob After Dark with you, Bob. Always good to be here.
Oh, yes. Count, weekend update.
Yeah, you know what? It's weird to ask for a weekend update when it's Thursday already.
Well, fine. Let's get your weekend a couple weekend.
No,
couple
I'll let you know update. How the weekend was as we're filming this on a Thursday. But the week was pretty good. I'm trying to remember. Trying to recall what exactly happened. You know, when, as you get older, as you age as a vampire, and yes, vampires do age just a little more slowly than the rest of society when that happens. But when they do that, they get a little forgetful sometimes. But other than that, throughout the week has been fine. Of course, we're in anticipation for the holiday season. The veil is at its thinnest currently. Well, getting thin right now at the moment, but as we prepare, I feel a little underdressed here, Bob. I didn't know this was, we were going to dress in our sweaters today.
I have, if you guys are watching the live show and not listening to the podcast, and especially if you're listening to this outside of winter, it's going to sound really weird. But I'm decked out in a, I'll stand up and give you guys a quick
shot. Yeah, let's see that.
I'm decked out in a Krampus Christmas sweater and scarf. It is the season, folks.
Look at that.
Yes, this was a gift from my aunt last holiday season, so I decided to kick off the holidays of Bob After Dark with a sweater. I got a wonderful new holiday spooky sweater from Pat and Rebecca from Ghostly. They sent me a Mothman Christmas sweater, which I'll be debuting next week on the show.
Okay, so you have multiple sweaters you could
Keep
going.
I had spooky sweater, and now it's plural.
All right.
Now we have two spooky Christmas sweaters, and I have a Ghostbusters one. I don't know if that counts as spooky, but I am a big fan of this now. This is my new winter aesthetic when I'm on the show. I'm going to be rocking the holiday cryptid and spooky sweaters. That's me. That's a new thing.
And a promise for you guys next week. Bob was nice enough to give me a Christmas gift already.
Yes.
Giving me one. So I will wear that next week. It's a very lovely gift.
Yes.
So I can't wait to show it off for next week for
yes,
Bob After Dark.
I showed that off before I gave it to you. And,
to who, though?
People.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were like, that is the coolest thing. Look.
Well, for some others, it might be a surprise.
I would take full credit for it, but I actually can't. My mom actually came up with a concept for
it's
it.
It's a great idea. Tower,
yes,
thank you.
Yeah, no. So that's we're looking forward to showing that off with you next week.
A teaser for next week.
Yes, and because you got new clothing, a certain character is not going to come after you.
You're right. That's the thing we can't forget now.
Yes,
yeah,
a certain cat that roams the Norwegian countryside. By the way, I hope we're recording.
We are recording.
Excellent. That's good. I feel like the podcast fans have to like enjoy listening to our banter back and forth in the beginning. It's like, are we recording?
We are recording. We're always recording. Even when we're not recording, we're recording.
You know, you never know because there's times when it might not be. Mm-hmm. So my weekend update was kind of interesting if you'd like to hear.
Yeah, I want to hear it, Bob. How was the weekend?
So I had a couple days off from the day job. So Saturday afternoon, I got to go visit with Dr. Ben Vanerson, and we went out to the Robinson Woods Forest Preserve to do a little investigating, and we had a really good time. It was us, and then we have another friend, Matt, who joined us, another paranormal enthusiast, so we got to go do a little bit of that. I've been doing side investigations that are socially distancing acceptable, And but kind of helping give some spiritual advice and kind of using some scientific stuff to help prove things. But the Robinson Woods was a really odd experience. You know, you can't really do a whole lot of interior investigations right now because we have a pandemic and you can't really go inside places with a group of people. So it was really cool to be able to experience and do something outdoors, especially because we had some nice weather. So we went out there and we did a real good hike through the woods. There's a lot of local lore that's involved with that place. You know, sightings of the Bigfoot out there, different Mothman sighting was out there. You know, it's tales of ghosts and spirits of natives past that are buried there. Robinson himself, Chief Robinson, is buried out in the Robinson Woods. We used some equipment. It was pretty interesting to see what we got. It was definitely a creepy experience.
Anything out of the ordinary? Yeah, we'd say
there was a couple things that kind of jumped out. One of the oddest parts. And I have to be honest, I don't necessarily know what I believe in time loops and things like that. It's kind of an odd, you know, experience. But Doc Vanerson's been a pseudo professional tracker. You know, part of his past job history was he was a tracker for the wild like preserve foundations and stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, he would go out and take hunting parties out, and then he would go and help, you know, conservation people get stuff together. The guy knows his stuff, especially about tracking, hiking. He knows it all. And it's kind of weird because there was a point when we got out to like a weird clearing where it was nothing but like dead trees and like cut down branches coming up looking like vines. It was a really bizarre, that was the most bizarre place you could be, because there's a lot of quick like heartbeat moments during that. And one of the strange occurrences that happened out there was we got lost in literally like a 20 to 40 foot radius. And it's kind of hard to do that, especially with two people. Matt has experience, you know, with that kind of thing too. And we were wandering and we literally got lost in that circle for a little bit. And it was just that was odd. I would say that was probably the spookiest.
It's like the Blair Witch style.
Yeah, it was. And you know, I've never experienced anything like that. So I'm not exactly sure what to.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what to buy into that.
That's fascinating, because at any point, I know you don't get spooked easily due to what you do.
No.
But when you're in a forest and you kind of get turned about, does that ever come across your mind, well, this is it? This is the end?
Not with the people I was with.
Okay.
No, they very much like to keep me, you know, they're my sworn protectors in humanity.
Okay.
So, no, they didn't mess around at all.
All right. Good to know.
No, I wasn't too worried. It was off-putting though to be out in that area and, you know, kind of experiencing those things firsthand, especially the weird loop. Robinson Woods and the entire Cook County Forest Preserve is, in my opinion, Chicagoland's window area, which was a term coined by John Keel a long time ago during like the Mothman prophecies investigations and stuff like that, which is a window area, is a spot where the veil between worlds, whatever you want to call it, is very thin, and you get a lot of high strangeness in that vicinity. And you got to think, you're right by O'Hare Airport, so there's a lot of energy that comes in and above, you know, airplanes flying by. I'd be interested to know if there was like a landline that kind of would run through that, because it's just a lot of weird that go on there. I remember last year around this time we covered the story of the half man, half mantis that made an appearance in Highland Park, which is, you know, same forest preserve, all connected, separated only by a road. So, you know, there's a lot of weird, again, that happens there. So it was really cool to go out there and experience that firsthand.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, like when something happens that, a hyperloop in the woods, I mean, how do we know where you're here for sure? Maybe you're still in the woods and we don't really know it. Who am I talking to right now?
Count, it's me.
Oh, it's you? Okay, good.
I promise you.
I should have checked you at the door with some ID or something.
No. I'm Bob.
Okay, good.
Trust me, nothing wants to be me. I assure you.
You could be Evil Bob, the one Evil Bob we talked about a lot on the show in the past.
No. Evil Bob isn't into the paranormal. He's a nature preserve, like bird watcher.
Good.
Um, I guess I was in a nature preserve. So, I mean, that's a thing.
Were you watching birds?
Deer. There were tons of deer.
How do you know they weren't cryptids?
I have a theory about one that we saw, you know, at one point we got out of Sud Woods, right? And we were in a clearing, and it was after a pretty high intense moment with just some weird going on. And we got out of the woods into the clearing where we, you know, started our journey. And when we got to this clearing, there was this buck, the giant buck that came out of the woods right where we came out of. It stopped in the clearing and just kind of turned its head and stared at us, and Ben kind of, you know, shoot it off. But that was a weird one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the deer in that place are, you know, they have no fear. They just want to get fed. So people out there, I guess, go and feed deer quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't get spooked about deer. It's kind of cool seeing them. But that buck had like a weird, like, jive feeling to it. And I can't put my finger on it. Like, that experience in general was really just off-putting, you know?
Yeah, well, it's good to have you here, Bob. I'm glad
Nothing
bad happened and you had a fun time.
Absolutely. And I had a really good experience. I want to give a quick shout-out to Pete from the Northwest Indiana Paranormal Group. He was able to loan me out some equipment so I can do some spiritual advisory for somebody. Mm-hmm. And that turned out really good. I won't go too much into details because that's their private story to share. But, you know, I had a pretty interesting weekend. And then, you know, you get back to your week, and of course, sports ball pushes us around a little bit on the live show.
Well, the good thing is, though, don't forget, we're close to the weekend here, so more fun to be had.
The more fun to be had, you are absolutely correct. Speaking of things, let's get to a couple quick announcements. Announcement one, this is just going to be very brief, folks, because there is a post on the Bob After Dark Facebook page about it. You guys can go check that out. It's in regards to the podcast. In the quickest way to describe this is the podcast is under construction. I don't know if you guys have realized that there are now two Bob After Dark like RSS feeds out there for like Apple Podcasts and stuff. We are migrating podcast hosts, and unfortunately that migration has not been an easy transition. So long story short, in the coming weeks, we're going to be getting ourselves prepped and back up and ready to go. We're going to be back on all podcast services that we were before, and there will be a new Bob After Dark RSS feed with the old episodes. And the old one that you guys were subscribed to before is going to stop. So you guys are going to have to get on it when the new one comes out, and I promise we'll share everything as it happens. Mm-hmm. And you guys just jump on over to the new RSS feeds. That'll be up, and you guys can listen to us again, all the library and the past few episodes that we haven't had a chance to upload on the old one. They're up on the new one, so I can get you guys the links. The Haunted Cars episode and the night with Kitsy Duncan and Jack Chavez's interview. Those are up, kind of. So we'll get you guys all set up and ready for that, and we'll talk. I promise. So I just wanted to fill you guys in. I don't, you know, unfortunately the hiccup was inevitable. So we're all good though. Everything's going to be just fine.
And
so,
you can binge watch those episodes now.
Yes, you totally can.
Binge listen.
Yeah, that's a thing. We do have fans that'll listen. You know, we're now on episode 54, 55, and it's just insane how fast the time flies. Okay, let's do announcement number two before we dive into the spooky news of the week. Bob After Dark has been selected to speak at a panel for 2021 for our first kind of virtual convention.
Wow.
Yes. We did something briefly at the beginning of the pandemic. We got involved with a group from Peoria that had like a local con, and we did like a ghost story read on our Facebook page. But this is going to be like a legit setup from a big convention. Last year, I had the opportunity and the pleasure to go speak at OhioCon in Columbus, and that was a blast. I know a lot of the fans that still listen, you know, came from OhioCon. That was probably our biggest presence we ever had. I got word that I'm going to be a featured panelist that weekend. I don't know the exact dates yet because they're still finalizing them, but I'll be hosting two panels. That weekend of EhioCon is what they're calling it. I'll be speaking Friday night at 8 p.m. That's going to be your traditional Bob After Dark, the paranormal and you. We're going to be talking about some Columbus stuff again, which I'm really excited to be talking about. And then Saturday night at 11 p.m., we're doing something just a pinch different. We're going to be hosting a adult-themed paranormal discussion. It's not going to be overboard, but it's not your typical content you find on the show or the podcast. This is, I can get, you know, this is
going to be... Adult theme. My mind is going to places, Bob.
We're
going to
be talking about
here?
The Japanese yokai.
Oh, okay.
And some other raunchier tales.
Oh.
Yes. It was a kind of a big vote, and a lot of people wanted to hear stuff like that. I don't talk about that on the podcast because... My podcast, Bob After Dark, is a family-friendly show. Mm-hmm. The radio show is family-friendly. You guys could check that out anytime. And I love when, you know, I have little, you know, fans who have kids that listen and they get to talk to me about ghost stuff. I love that. That's a lot of fun. That's my bread and butter. I get to let loose just a little bit, and this is, you know, a con exclusive. I'm not going to be sharing that on the podcast. Maybe I might record it and upload it as an explicit episode, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to kind of experiment with that. We're going to, because the yokai are something I can't a whole lot talk about on the show, because a lot of those things are very naughty by nature. Yeah. So we're very excited to be able to share and talk a little bit about that. As soon as I have the dates for the OhioCon panels, I will let you know. Those can be found on Discord. As soon as I know what's going on there, I promise I will fill you guys in, and you guys can join us on the Discord for all of that. I'll be hosting another panel, co-hosting another panel that weekend. It's not Bob After Dark related, but I'm going to be joining Sarge Pepper, one of the director of operations for the OhioCon. Mm-hmm. He runs a panel about running panels. And Sarge and I, since last year, he was the one that got me into the Bob After Dark, like the experience at OhioCon. And Sarge and I have become really good friends since that. And, you know, he ran this panel and I said, you know, we should collab because, man, I run a lot of panels, as you guys know. So we're going to collab on that one. I don't know the time or the day of that particular one. If you guys are interested in ever learning on how to run a panel at a convention, you guys can check that out.
And then there's going to be a panel on the panel about running the panel. A panelception.
That's the Count Panic one. So those are just two things, guys. I know the podcast stuff's rough. I understand. But trust me, after all this, things are looking up. 2021 is going to be a big year for us. We're launching a Patreon. That's coming very soon. The Bob After Dark website is coming, like, probably within the next few weeks, which we're really excited about. You know, it's been talked about for like a year, but we're getting the Bob After Dark website up and running. There's a lot of cool things coming, so stick around. Now, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to us on the show, Bob After Dark is about legends, lore, and the supernatural. This is your weekly show talking about things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and, you know, the things that terrify you the most. We divide the show up into a couple segments. One of the segments is talking about the weird, spooky, and creepy news of the week. Mm. This is where you guys, the fans, submit news articles to me. Count Panic knows nothing about them, and we get the hashtag Panic's Take.
Indeed.
Yes, we need to get a musical number for that. and I can splice into the podcast.
Nice little jingle there.
Nice little jingle.
Be nice.
It's Panic's Take. I don't know.
That's not bad. Yeah, we can record that.
Yeah. You don't want me singing, bro. All right, so you guys, I lost my train of thought. So my first story actually was submitted to us by several fans. This was submitted not only by our fan Brandon, Alicia, Bobby. We had several of you guys that submitted this, and it started off as a low-key story, but now the story is growing and growing in popularity, and it's kind of coinciding with a lot that we've been talking about in the news of the week, is that the former Israeli space security chief says aliens exist and humanity is not ready. The Galactic Federation has supposedly been in contact with Israel and the U.S. for years, but are keeping themselves a secret to prevent hysteria until humanity is ready. This article comes to us from the Jerusalem Post, but it's been shared now it's been shared even as high up as, you know, NBC, you know, CNN, stuff like that. So the story's getting pretty big. This gentleman's by the name of, and you guys have to forgive my enunciation, his name's Yidat Aharonic Assad, who served as the head of Israel's space program for nearly 30 years and is a three-time recipient of the Israeli Security Award. explained that the Israel and the U.S. have been dealing with aliens for years, and by no means refers to, you know, people, but they're classifying the existence of a galactic federation. The 87-year-old former head of Defense Ministry Space Division gave us further descriptions about exactly what sort of agreements have been made between aliens and the U.S., which they're saying things like, you know, they're researching things like the fabric of the universe and a secret underground base on Mars where there are American and alien representatives. So thinking Star Wars, this is like a legitimate galactic, you know, federation or empire, depending on what side you hang out on. Apparently, this is a real thing, and they've been in contact with Earth for a while. The story goes deeper in saying that Donald Trump's known about this, and, you know, he was basically saying things like, you know, this gentleman who's sharing this experience has said if he would have come up with what he's saying 5 years ago, he would have been hospitalized. Today, they're talking already differently. I have nothing to lose. I've received my degrees and my awards, and I am respected in universities abroad, where the trend is also changing. So he's basically saying at his, you know, at his age, he has nothing to lose, and he's sharing all of this information about this galactic federation that exists, and, you know, they don't want Earth to kind of be involved with it yet, because humans are dumb. Hashtag panics take.
Okay, a question here. So are they among us or not among us? Is what they were trying to say there.
They're there. They're aware of Earth's existence.
But they're not here.
They're not here.
Okay. Because that makes a difference.
Because they don't think humanity is ready for them and their existence.
All right, so they're not hiding amongst us right now. They're still out there, but they know of us.
Yes.
Which leads me to believe, what are they waiting for? That's the big question I have. What are they exactly waiting for? What moment in time?
When humanity stops being dumb. You know,
so
guys,
wait, they're waiting us to be smart?
Well,
that will never happen.
No, that will never happen. Now listen, you know, as much I love you guys, I do. You guys, Children of the Night, my fan base, you guys are fantastic. Humanity in general never ceases to amaze me. But man, we are dumb. We are. There's a scene in Plan 9 from Outer Space, and I'm getting off track just a pinch. But there's the scene in the alien talking to the humans, like, you're all stupid, stupid, mm-hmm. stupid, stupid. They couldn't be more right. I mean, as a species, we have failed in evolution, right? We have these advanced forms of technology that we're getting down, and we're figuring out how to do things. But, you know, I don't want to get into the philosophical discussion, but I mean, we have problems with racism in the year 2020, sexism, you know, there's a lot of the horrible things that people do to each other. And until we understand how to get past that, we don't deserve the other stuff. Trust me, I'm being honest with you. Listen, if an alien landed down today and said, hey, we come in peace, I promise you somebody's going to try to shoot at it. It's just inevitable, and that, unfortunately, is why we don't deserve contact with, you know, extraterrestrial life. I don't think it's plausible.
Do you think there's any dumb aliens out there?
Yeah, us.
Well, to them, but, like, when we talk about these far-off planets, do you think these are highly intelligent entities we're dealing with? Or do you think there's some that are slacking in the intelligence department?
I'm sure there are
levels.
I'm sure there's different levels. You probably have things that understand how everything interacts and reacts with each other on a constant basis. I'm sure they understand. I'm sure there's, you know, creatures that mimic us, and I'm sure there's creatures probably even below us out there. I don't know. It's a strange question, but you know, it doesn't surprise me that something like this exists. It really doesn't. At this point in 2020, you could literally tell me that the sky is raining, you know, lime Kool-Aid, and I'd be like, oh, okay.
Be delicious.
Yeah.
I would go out there.
With a cup. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't surprise me that these things happen, no. But it, I don't know.
Something to keep on the radar there, Bob.
Absolutely. Galactic Federation, I approve your message of thinking that we need to wait until we're ready. People panic about things too, no pun intended.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know. I'm a firm believer that that is exactly true. Moving on, this is one that I found and I thought was really interesting. So if you guys I don't know if I ever shared this with you guys. One of my dreams in life is to actually get a degree in parapsychology from a university. I do not have a parapsychology degree. And fun fact, there are very few universities that actually offer a program of study in parapsychology. When I say parapsychology, I mean like the paranormal side of science. It's pseudoscience being studied at like a university level with actual, you know, like legitimate science that goes into what we do. And, you know, you learn about different things and, you know, the pseudoscience stuff. You're basically learning what we do, but on a high education scale. There's not a lot of universities that offer them. There's one that offers even a doctorate online. I don't know how legit they are, but I've always wanted to take some of these courses and get a degree in parapsychology. So
they didn't, wait, they didn't offer this at the college we went to?
We did not.
Okay.
We took a, you know, we did not have parapsychology, or I would have taken it. But there's a new course that's around. It's getting a lot of hype, and I'm going to try to reach out to the professor that's teaching this. But at the North Carolina State University is offering a class called STS 490 Science, PSI, Sasquatch, and Spirits. This interdisciplinary course teaches students how to use the scientific methods to explore topics that are not genuinely considered part of the mainstream science. And they offer the class online Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4:30 to 5:45. This class is taught by Darby or Court, and it's a, you know, a quote from Darby says, we try to ask why some fields are considered worthy of scientific work and why some subjects are excluded from serious scientific study. According to Court, the students taking STS 490 will look at potential evidence for these paranormal ideas and then use scientific research methods to further investigate them. The best way to frame this class is cultural studies course, Orchid said, is a humanistic approach to a science. While at times we use humanities or social science lens to look at the subject matter, we are doing so by embedding ourselves in scientific practice. There's an alum from the university, Tyler Curry, said took the course in 2018 and said they enjoyed the style in class, and they talked a little bit about it because it's still really new. This class introduces you how to think about science in a new light and can open up a perspective you might hold about things that might not be possible. It also shows the relationship between popular culture and science. They do things like take field trips to haunted houses and bring EMF readers. They went out to the cryptozoology museum, you know. Mm-hmm. That is the coolest thing. And this story comes to us from the Technician Online, written by Heidi Reed. And that is the coolest thing to me. You know, people like Pete out there doing things with like the Griffith High School Paranormal Club that he offers, and these courses in the universities. That's really amazing. You know, you grow up and you're really involved in the paranormal and you think it's really cool and you study it, and you know, you're kind of looked at kind of weird sideways because people don't understand what you're talking about and talking about monsters and et cetera. That stuff fascinates the heck out of me. And it's really cool to think that there's like-minded people taking courses like this. And especially at, you know, an actual, like, accredited college. You know, I was saying there's, like, a university online that offers parapsychology degrees to the doctorate level. But that's not, like, I can't just go to Berkeley, for example, no, and take, like, get a degree in parapsychology or, you know, paranormal studies, whatever. That doesn't exist. But the fact that things like this happen, and especially with this course kind of growing and becoming bigger, that's so fascinating to me. And, you know, I hope that people like Pete out there who are pioneering that kind of field are, you know, learning and reaching out. I remember Pete and I talking about the group once, and he was telling me, you know, there's other groups that are popping up in different schools across the state and in, you know, the country. And Pete was one of the first people to really do that for the high school. And it's really cool to see this college campus offers that. You know, I hope someday, maybe in my lifetime, I could find a university that's accredible, and I'll go back to school and go study parapsychology. I you know, what am I going to do with the degree? You're looking at it. I'm going to be running a paranormal podcast. But you know what? I could say I can be called a doctor.
Dr. Bob.
Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob After Dark.
Greetings, Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, paging Dr. Bob.
Hashtag panic stake.
Well, that is pretty cool. And, you know, you mentioned Pete there and Griffith, Don Bernacki, Crown Point. They have these, they kind of teach these kids about the paranormal and take them into certain places and kind of get them a grasp on it. And it's interesting. I think years ago, this wasn't a thing. It's only been something happening maybe the past 5-10 years, but it seems to be growing, not just in high schools, but colleges. They're teaching courses on it. And I think there's some kind of stigma there still. Like, your parent might be like, wait, you're taking a class? Who's teaching you about ghosts? You're supposed to be learning math and English. You're learning about ghosts? But
my mom and dad would have signed me up without even me knowing. They're like, oh, hey, we signed you up for an investigation. Just go.
But there's room. That's part of a well-rounded education. Learn your history. Learn about the past. And maybe you'll get to meet it, of course, if you're lucky there. Or not so lucky, depending on what exactly is. But yeah, Bob, I think this is the thing of the future. I think more and more high schools and colleges might be getting on board with stuff like this.
Count, would you have taken a course on, like, parapsychology or study of sciences like that? Or, you know what I mean, like a parapsychology course?
Yeah, I would have, although it might be tougher to convince a Catholic high school, which is the one I went to maybe get a class on that. But maybe the public schools will probably be the first to tackle stuff like that. But, yeah, I would have took one. Yeah.
Yeah.
College offered it, maybe?
You know, we should go and get degrees in this and then go, you know, press the university to let us teach courses on it.
We could go back. I mean, we both went to the same college. We should just
We both have degrees.
We should teach a class.
I want to teach a paranormal course. I really do. I think maybe my Patreon, like, that'll be a thing for top tier Patreons. I don't know. But I think that'd be so fascinating. And the cooler thing is, you know, as much as I'd like to say, you know, I'd like to take a paranormal course with you, what would be even cooler is taking these courses with people you don't know.
Yes.
Can you imagine, like, the cultural impact of taking a course like this with people from different walks of life, you know, different religious aspects? That's cool. That's why I like when I get to do my panels at cons and people come and talk to me about what they believe. You know, I met fans who are strong native, right? They come from a native background, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they follow that culture still in 2020, and they come to me and they share their experiences and they share their teachings about, you know, shamanism, whatever it might be. That is the coolest thing to me. And I think that'd be cool to take a course with people like that, where they can explain what a ghost is to them, because a ghost to me is not going to be the same thing as a spirit. Yes. To you know, a monk in Tibet. It's a totally different thing. And that, to me, would be the coolest part of taking a course like that. So that's some news. Hats off to you guys. And we're going to, Count, let's reach out to that professor that's teaching that course.
Yeah, we'll get in contact here.
In contact and see what we can learn. Yes.
Maybe you can become a doctor live on the show. I mean, just like that. Take one course and boom. Dr. Bob. Could happen just like that, Bob. Who says it has to be a 4-year process? Could happen one night.
One night. I don't know. I digress. Moving on. So, yes, hats off to that. And then hats off to Pete, too, because Pete's great in doing what he does. Pete's chiming in, talking about, you know, history and stuff like that. That's always the coolest part. So hats off to Pete in doing what he does, because he's literally pioneering the same kind of idea in high schools.
Yep.
And he was talking about how his students are like the most well-behaved, and I'm sure they are. Pete's a great guy, and I respect him full-heartedly, not as a friend, not only as a friend, but as a colleague in the paranormal. So people like that are doing these things, that's important. And I think it's important to, you know, if a kid wants to learn this stuff, you can't force him. But if a kid wants to learn it, I go for it, man. Mm-hmm. You might actually learn something about life from the paranormal. And I think that's something you could take away from it. Well, let's move on to the last story. And this is a follow-up to a story now 3 weeks running.
I had a feeling you were going to talk about this.
Listen, 2 weeks ago we talked about this monolith in Utah. Last week with Kitsy, we talked about the monolith popping up in, what was it, Scotland?
Okay. It's hard to keep track of all these now.
Listen, they're popping up everywhere now. And I am 98% sure that 98% of these monoliths are complete hoaxes.
Copycats.
There are so many of them now. The story comes to us from CNN, and monolith sightings spread across the world. The mysterious structures have appeared across the United States and Europe. While some people are responsible have come forward, other monolith creators have remained a mystery. These things I've seen, like, them pop up in Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh, and, you know, I've seen them pop up everywhere. Even people are building them as jokes now, but we still don't know really the you know, the mystery that's behind the first one. And, you know, you put out one, and then people start getting really interested in it, and it's becoming a meme. And it's, you know, there are parts of it that are humorous. In the Children of the Night page, I've seen James from Peoria typing in and posting up memes of them being in, like, bathrooms and stuff, and I get a good laugh out of it. But, you know, you're bound to catch those things, right? And I maybe this is my last week talking about this, unless something really pops up that's different. But in the past week, I have seen so many of these monoliths popping up in different places. And it's funny, I got a friend, Andrew. Andrew commented on one that I posted about the one that was popped up in Europe. And he actually he knows welding, apparently. Mm-hmm. And he was able to zoom in and see, like, the weld patterns. And apparently, the weld patterns in the one made in Europe that made the big news last week, he said that you can look in and see where the welding patterns are really, really, like, you know, schlock.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of funny, you know. And
what
somebody
just bad at? Maybe they're welding it. People who do
somebody
this.
I can't remember who said this to me, but apparently, if you triangulate the location from the first and second monolith found, like, you go in and you find out where the two meet, mm-hmm. I whatever math you put into something like that, it ends up at a Bass Pro Shop or a Cabela's. I can't remember which one it was, but I think in Nashville, Tennessee.
Really?
Yeah, well, like the points meet there.
I heard it was at the Mars Cheese Castle they were pointing at.
That count.
But this was a Bass Pro Shop / Cabela's, maybe, possibly. So yeah. What's this? Okay, continue.
Hashtag,
on, Bob.
I'm done. That's all I got to say is these things are popping up everywhere. Hashtag panic steak.
All right. So this is supposed to, say this is all for real, right? And they do meet up, and it's taking place at this Bass Pro Shop / Cabela's. What's this telling us here? Do they want to fish? Do they want to hunt?
There's the thing in Ghostbusters where the alien went to the woman and said that the world was going to end, and then I can't remember the Holiday Inn. God, somebody's going to take my Ghostbusters fan card away from me.
Uh-oh.
I'm sure James will probably
it's late.
I'm sure James will probably say something and tell me where it was at. But they say that the Holiday Inn, that's where, like, the world was going to, like, conjoin and end. I remember in 2012, people were escaping to this island on the equator. I can't remember the whole story behind it, but people were escaping there because apparently if the polar ice caps melted at once in, you know, 2012, when December 21st, when the world was supposed to end, apparently that island was going to be spared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's the case. The world comes to an end and you have to converge on this Bass Pro Shop.
Wow.
Or Cabela's. I can't remember what the...
I'd much rather go to the Cabela's, I feel like. They get a little more selection.
I was
going to
say I'd rather go to the Mars Cheese Castle.
The Mars Cheese Castle. They meet up at the Mars Cheese Castle. I'm sold there. But as Andy points out here, it's 3 points, but we're at the point now. We're like at five.
There's
or six.
Probably 20 of them.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of these.
No monolith has popped up over here, unfortunately. I haven't heard about the Chicago monolith yet. Yet.
Northwest Indiana.
I'm going to say that now, and then tomorrow somebody's going to put a picture up and be like, hey, Bob, found this monolith next to the bean.
Well, it would match the bean.
Yeah.
Who says the bean's not a part of this?
The bean's not a monolith. The bean's
a
bean.
Same material. It's maybe the granddaddy of all monoliths, although you can't call it a monolith because it's a bean, but you get my point.
So what do you think? Do you think this is just turning into a straight hoax at this point?
Well, the first one intrigued me because it's been a while since this happened.
Yeah.
Then the second one popped up. I was like, well, it's going to happen. There's going to be a third one. Then the third one popped up. I was like, well, this is it. Something's going to happen next. But then the fourth one, I think we're on the fifth one or sixth one. So it's getting to the point where I'm starting to believe, wow, this may, and I like to believe stuff, but I think this is all just a bunch of baloney, Bob.
Oh, you're planting the skeptic flag on this one.
Well, are you saying it's real?
No.
Okay.
I am also planning.
So we're both
the,
doing
I am planning okay. the. I am climbing Mount Skeptic, and I have placed my flag in it and said, you know what, I can hang out here.
Now, some have disappeared, correct?
Yes, the original one mysteriously disappeared. And Kitsy and I were talking after the show last week, and she sent me that photo she was talking about where somebody took the picture of them, like some hikers at this area, and there is this horrifying image in the background that someone caught off this, like, TikTok. And listen, if there's something like that kicking around after this, I can't describe it. I'll put up the picture. I always say I'm going to put up the picture, and I never put up the picture, but I'm going to put up the picture that Kitsy sent me.
We got to put up a lot of pictures. But this is a picture. There's something lingering in the background there.
Yes.
Okay, I'm interested.
And it was horrifying.
Really?
Like razor sharp teeth and claws and stuff, man. I'm telling you, it's scary stuff. Count, where would you put a monolith?
Kosciusko Park, East Chicago, Indiana, right next to the statue of Thaddeus Kosciusko. Thank you for your service, sir. But yes, I would put one there. So some people were seen carrying away. It's the ones that are still up that we got to gather around. There should be a 24/7 camera to make sure this thing stays put, because that's the sign it's fake when people start taking these things down. They got to be firmly planted in the ground.
Firmly planted.
Immovable. So whatever's remaining out there, there should be a wall around. They should be guarding those things with their lives. But yeah, I'm kind of with you here and with a lot of folks. It might be a hoax, Bob. It might be a hoax.
I hope it's a hoax.
Well, for our sake. If not, we had a good run, and I'll meet you at the Bass Pro Shop.
I'll meet you at the Bass Pro Shop. That's where the final stand for humanity is, that Bass Pro Shop.
We'll plant our flag firmly.
Hey, listen, real quick, Bass Pro Shop or Cabela's, if you're looking to sponsor a paranormal podcast, look no further. You guys like going outdoors? I like going outdoors.
You know, they could use this for a good promotion right about now.
I'm saying, you know, y'all want to go looking for Bigfoot, I recommend you buy such and such product from such and such place.
Yeah, yeah.
Gander Mountain, I'm not excluding you either. You guys are looking to sponsor a podcast. We're your show.
Arthur's pointing out here, the statue of Kosciusko is wrapped around a monolith. Well, if that's the case, we'll plant one at Big Frank's Sauce in East Chicago, Indiana. Maybe there's a monolith there. Cheese curds. Over there too, as well. Fine cheese curds. Cheap plug for them. Sponsored a show.
Listen, as much as we talk about, the Marsh Cheese Castle, you would think that they would sponsor us by now.
We gotta poke them a little bit more.
I am. I'm gonna write the Marsh Cheese Castle and be like, listen,
great for them.
Guys, listen to me. We talk about you at least twice a month, if not more. We bring you up in most of our podcast episodes. Can you at least spare a bag of cheese curds?
Well, yeah. Well, you know the bartender, right?
We talked about the dog man, actually, when I was there. Me and Anthony had some beers.
So we're good to go, I think, on that.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Now, folks, the live show is going to be staying live here very much. Staying live here. So if you guys want to call in, ask a question, say hello, whatever it might be, our phone number is 219-845-1100. And if you're listening in on podcast land, call when we're live so then you can hear yourself live on the show the next time you listen to podcast.
And I got to make a point here for people wondering. John, who I know personally here.
Oh, you're in for – you have a good – what's the word I'm thinking of?
An update?
Yeah, you have a good authority. There you go.
That's he's a little preoccupied at the moment. So if he doesn't call in this episode and you're wondering, well, what the heck happened there? He missed only one episode in the past. It's because there's – Well, he's a little preoccupied, but other than that, he's doing fine. He's doing fine. He's just doesn't want anybody to worry about him. So we continue on. But again, if you want to call, 219-845-1100. Again, that number is 219-845-1100. Bob, back to you.
Yes. Count, by the way, somebody's trying to make – James from Peoria has the best hashtag.
Let me
going
see.
Going right now in the chat. It's
Curds for the Count.
Curds for the Count.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Folks, we'll let you take that away, and we're going to take just a couple second break, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
For our podcast fans, stick around because you're going to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to the live audience. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
Welcome back.
Hey.
We're back. Hi, Count.
How's it going, Bob?
Not bad. What'd you do during break?
Bob, I just planted a monolith.
Where'd you plant it?
Oh, you know where I planted it, right there in Kosciuszko Park, as I promised. Oh. Well, I didn't promise that, but I promise you now, it's there. Go past it.
Mm. Would you like to know what I did?
What did you do, Bob?
I also planted a monolith.
Where'd you plant yours?
Right in front of the Cabela's.
Perfect. Well, the fate is sealed. It's there, it's there.
Yep. I planted that monolith there. Now we're back.
It's nice knowing you.
Absolutely. Hey, Count.
Yeah, Bob.
Do the woods scare you?
Do the woods scare me? Well, I'll tell you, Bob, the woods. During the day, not so much, although if I'm by myself, it's kind of creepy. At night, though, it's a whole different story. The woods are a very terrifying place to be.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yes.
You were just there.
I was just there. Yeah. And the woods have a weird vibe to them. You know, you're in this primal place. Some may find it tranquil. They're out hunting deer or something. But what if you're the one being hunted? You know, what if you're the one that's being watched when you're out there? You know, some of the greatest, you know, spooky stories that are ever told are always told in the woods or the forest. You know, even back to the, you know, the Hans brothers, where they were talking about the, Hans Grimm's brothers, when they were talking about the, you know, Hansel and Gretel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that witch lived out in the woods and was going to eat them. You know, there's all of those things. Even if you look at, like, Hocus Pocus, there's always the weird witch that lives in the woods. No, nothing bad against our witchy community, because most of you probably don't live in the woods and live in apartments in Chicago. You know, you hear about these monsters, and then there's, like, the Blair Witch, and then there's, you know, there's always this concept of just being out there. And, you know, you paint a picture in your mind of just walking alone, and you hear trees rustling and leaves being crunched, maybe a fog rolling in, and you just maybe think that you might be alone, but in reality you're not. And the story I'm talking about this week is about a very horrifying and extremely dangerous cryptid that dates back to ancient times.
Wonder who it could be.
We are talking about the Wendigo.
Hey, from Canada, right?
Yeah, well,
I knew that.
Did you do some research?
I know it's from Canada, or somewhere around those parts.
Yes, yeah. It's mostly known up in, like, Minnesota and the Dakotas and Canada.
Yeah.
Yep. Once upon a time ago, we did this episode topic a long time ago, back when we were just a radio show, not podcast. And I was never really happy with the way it turned out. I never really had a chance to talk about everything I wanted. I think I was even still in the whispering phase. The whisper days.
You did the whole episode on a whisper.
I used to talk like this the entire episode of the shows. Welcome to Bob After Dark. Now these days I talk in my normal Bob voice, which is far better. I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I wanted to be some spooky, creepy dude. In reality, I'm just this fun-loving guy. But I digress. So we did this Wendigo episode, and I wasn't really happy about it, so I wanted to revisit it. This year, instead of doing Spirit of the Holidays, because I think we've covered just about everything you could possibly think of that's a weird, like, holiday creature, myth, monster thing, I want to talk about the winter. It's a very cold, desolate, dead season.
Mm-hmm.
And in that cold, desolate, dead season, You paint a picture in your mind, and it's just a snow-covered landscape. And deep into that snow-covered landscape is something looking back at you, hunting you, waiting for you. So all throughout the month of December, we're going to be talking about these types of things. And what better way to kick off that feeling
than with the old Ojibwe stories of the Wendigo.
From Canada.
Good job, Count Panic. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what the actual Wendigo is, shall we?
Sure.
So as the tales go, some of the first ever Wendigo was a lost hunter. During a brutally cold winter, the man's intense hunger drove him to cannibalism, and after feasting on another human's flesh, he transformed into a crazed man-beast, roaming the forest in search of people to eat. In another version of the story, the first Wendigo is said to be a brave warrior who made a pact with a demigod. In order to save his tribe, he gave up his soul and was transformed into a Wendigo. When peace ensued, there was no need for such a fearsome creature, and the warrior was banished from the tribe and forced to live as a outcast. The tale of the Wendigo comes from an Algonquin Native American folklore, and the exact details varying depending on who you ask. Some people claimed of an encountering a beast, say it's a relative of Bigfoot, but other reports have compared the Wendigo to a werewolf instead, and I would compare it to nothing like that. But the Wendigo is more skinwalker than it is anything, and even then, that's putting it lightly. The imagery you could think of, the best way to describe what a Wendigo is, the best imagery I can, you put it. Think of it as a really tall, walking upright, half-man, half-deer creature.
Terrifying.
Terrifying. Long antlers, giant claws, razor-sharp teeth, sometimes skeletal, sometimes has fur, sometimes it's said to, walk among glowing, and there's just so many of these weird, horrifying tales that talk about these things. And we talk about the tribes and their belief in this thing was so deep. And the best way to start is with the Ojibwe tribe would describe it as, it was a large creature as tall as a tree, with lipless mouth and jagged teeth. Its breath was a strange hiss, its footprints full of blood, and it ate any man, woman, or child who ventured into its territory. And those were the lucky ones. Sometimes the Wendigo choose to possess a person instead, and that luckless individual become a Wendigo themselves, hunting down those who they had loved and feasting upon their flesh. According to legends, a Wendigo is created whenever a human resorts to cannibalism to survive. In the past, this occurred more often when natives and settlers found themselves stranded in the bitter snows and ice of the North Woods. Sometimes stranded for days, any survivors might felt compelled to cannibalize the dead in order to survive. Other versions of the legend cite that humans who displayed extreme greed and gluttony in excess might also be possessed by a Wendigo. Thus, the myth served as a method of encouraging cooperation and moderation. That quote comes to us from Legends of America. The concept of becoming a Wendigo was a more or less a curse. And it was definitely a way of, teaching people a tale not to do things. A lot of these legends are born from a lesson that you have to teach somebody. And, you want to scare them away from doing something. And in this case, it was cannibalism. A Wendigo is a curse. If you become one, you turn into this devilish figure who has an unsatisfiable hunger. Constantly hungry, constantly eating, and never stopping, wanting to consume more. Yeah, you have the powers that ensue, which we're going to talk about later, but can you imagine just being hungry all the time and never being able to finish, to serve that need? And can you imagine just being forced to be driven to wanting to eat and consume the flesh of people that you once loved because you knew they'd been easy prey? You know where to find them? That is a curse, everybody. That's not a power that you want to, a thing. It's not a gift.
There's a tale of a man by the name of Swift Runner. And this is an actual true story. Swift Runner was a Cree native who lived during the last century in what is now known as Central Alberta. His background seemed not unusual. As a young man, he received a solid, useful Cree education. He married and had a family of 6 children. He traded with the Hudson Bay Company, and in 1875, he served as a guide for the Northwest Mounted Police. But Swift Runner's life ended tragically in notoriety. During the winter of 1878 and 1879, a time of starvation and misery for the Cree people, he became possessed by something that psychologists now refer to as Wendigo psychosis, and we'll talk a little bit about that here soon. He murdered his wife and his family and cooked and ate their flesh. Eventually, he was arrested, brought to trial, and in 1879 was hanged at Fort Saskatchewan. The Wendigo psychosis is an actual like mental disease that people are afflicted with, that, you know, mental health professionals have come up with this concept. It's the idea that you are driven madness by the concept of just wanting to eat human flesh. It is more than just an addiction. It has consumed every ounce of your energy, every ounce of your life. You want nothing more than consuming flesh. And if you have that, you are diagnosed with Wendigo psychosis. Real disease. So even if you don't believe in the monster, the concrete thing that stands in front of you, then just know that there's an actual, you know, diagnosis, something that you can get that's related to this, you know, this concept.
So on the lines of cannibalism,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The origin and history of the Wendigo existed in Algonquin oral history for many centuries, long before Europeans arrived in North America. However, the first European writer account of the Wendigo was by Paul Lengenot, a Jesuit missionary who lived among the Algonquin people in the early 17th century, which is now Quebec. In a report to his superiors in Paris in 1636, Lengenot wrote, "This devilish woman added that the Wendigo had eaten some of the Etakonkan. There's tribes that live north of the river that is called Three Rivers, and that he would eat a great many more of them if he was not called elsewhere. But that Atchison, sort of a werewolf, would come in his place to devour them. Even up to the French fort, he would slaughter the French themselves." Father Lejeune's report demonstrates that 17th century Europeans believed in evil supernatural spirits just strongly as their first nation's contemporaries. In fact, Father Lejeune's report predicts that the predates the Salem witch trials by nearly 60 years. So you got to think, people were still superstitious even back then, predating the concept of these, you know, the Salem witch trials. So, I mean, people were still worried about monsters even then. And, I mean, this is from a guy who was out here doing exploratory and research stuff. I mean, this is huge. Stories could also be found on the Western frontier in the 1800s amongst plains of indigenous peoples and employees of the Hudson Bay Company. The HBC traders records describe encounters with the first indigenous spirit leaders claiming to descend into fits of religious passion. Indigenous peoples often accuse these people of being Wendigos. The HBC traders sometimes describe them as mad. In some cases, community members or relatives of the accused kill the suspected Wendigo as a precaution. In one example, 3 men killed a Cree spiritual leader after he became greedy and killed an indigenous family, which led others to believe that he was a Wendigo. What you think so far, Count?
Seems believable. So I'll continue on here, but you talk about that appetite, that lingering appetite, which a lot of us can relate to, but this is the appetite for human flesh, which makes it all that much terrifying.
Yes.
Who knew this was happening in Canada? I, for one, didn't.
Absolutely. By the way, folks, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Canadian Encyclopedia of all places
really?
For helping me get some research done for this. The Canadian Encyclopedia defined the Wendigo as, this is their exact definition for it. According to most Algonquin oral traditions, a Wendigo is a cannibalistic monster that preys on the weak and socially disconnected.
Huh.
In most versions of the legend, a human becomes a Wendigo when his or her spirit is corrupted by greed and weakened by extreme conditions, such as cold and hunger. In other legends, humans become Wendigo when possessed by a prowling spirit during a moment of weakness. Depending on the First Nations that speak Algonquin language, including the Abenaki, Sirsiki, Mamwak, Algonquin, Ojibwe, and the Innu, the spelling or pronunciation of the word Wendigo differs. There's the Wendigo, the Wendingo, the Wedigo, the Wethalkic, and words I can't even begin to try to pronounce, and my favorite, the Wedica, are alternative versions of the same term, or other names such as the Etchin, Chenu, and the Kennewalk are all commonly referred to as the Wendigo. I mean, this is coming from, like, the actual Canadian government putting this thing out.
Now, where do you go for something like that? Canada?
What, for the Canadian Encyclopedia?
Yeah, you have to go up there for that?
You go to the CanadianEncyclopedia.ca.
It's online? Oh, it's online. Okay. I thought you traveled to Canada for this.
Yeah, I mean, just travel to Canada during
research.
Jeez. So the Wendigo is usually but not always endowed with powers such as superhuman strength and stamina that allow it to stalk, overpower, and devour its victims. Wendigos are usually credited with exponential eyesight, exceptional eyesight, hearing, and sense of smell. They are said to move with the speed of the wind and have the ability to walk across deep snow or even open water without sinking. That is what terrifies me. In most bits of lore, running water is supposed to stop an evil force without crossing over it. You hear this even in old times when people were trying to outrun, like, demonic forces. They would always cross the water. Tolkien wrote about that in Lord of the Rings and with the River of Rivendell. It's a common old tradition of this river or this running water being able to stop something evil from crossing. That's just lore. And the fact that a Wendigo can cross over the running water is a depiction to how strong and how dangerous this thing actually is. Keep that in mind. According to some legends, Wendigos can be killed with conventional weapons such as a club or a firearm. Other legends claim that the Wendigo has to somehow be subdued, its icy heart cut out and melted in a roaring fire. Still other legends claim that only a knowledgeable First Nation spiritual leader, a shaman, can dispatch a Wendigo with a specific spell or ceremony. The Wendigo legend existed in Algonquin history for many centuries, long before the Europeans came there. So you got to think, even with our written history of how long this thing's been around, can you imagine how much longer before our written history people were talking about this thing?
Mm-hmm.
That scares me. Yeah. That's a horrifying concept. This isn't, something like back when we were doing this, the podcast version of the show, or did I do it back when we were live? I can't remember. We talked about Siren Head and the modernization of us creating this monster in modern day, or Slender Man, for example, too. That's something that we create now in 20th century, right? Are we in the 21st century?
I think we're at that point.
I can't even think, right? So anyway, we're at that point in time. We're creating the lore. But this stuff existed long, long before mm-hmm. we were here. And that makes you think, did people just create this just to tell people don't eat each other? Or is there some legitimate truth to the story? You can go online and read about Wendigo encounters. It's very common. And if you speak to Ojibwe's, like elder folk, they can share stories about the Wendigo coming and stalking them in the night. That, you got to think, if there's two big bads in Native culture, if you're looking at, like, the southwest portions of America and across, like, the warmer parts, you deal with the skinwalkers. Any native tribe that's above, they're dealing with the Wendigo. What you think, Count?
I mean, pretty much documented even before there was documentation, was what you're trying to say there. And take it back to the thing you're mentioning about the water. So even if you're trying to swim away from this thing, you can't escape it.
No.
Because it walks
yep.
upon the water.
So I was doing some research into what you would actually do if you encountered a Wendigo.
Really? What do you do?
Outshoot it. You better hope you can fight it because there's no running away from this thing. It runs so fast. And the abilities of the Wendigo are near demigod-like. So I remember back episode one of our podcast, we talked about the Yuka Onna
mm-hmm.
from Japan that would be able to throw its voice to make people lure out. Comes from Wendigo. Wendigo like speak does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
A Wendigo can throw its voice or throw its, you know, voice and make it sound like something in a different location.
Yeah.
So imagine you're in a hunting party and you just randomly start hearing a baby cry mm-hmm. out in the woods where you're supposed to be by yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you decide you're going to go investigate.
Gotta find that baby.
Gotta go find the baby. Well, you go try to find that baby. That Wendigo's coming after you.
Interesting.
A Wendigo is able to control the weather at will. So once a small snowstorm turns into a giant blizzard turns into apocalyptic cold. That's the Wendigo.
Now, is that just for a certain area? Is that for the whole, a city or a town there?
Don't know.
Does it make you feel like it's that way? Is the interesting thing I wonder about.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrifying idea, though. Not to mention super speed, super strong, and, best part, they're necromancers. The Wendigo can raise the recently dead.
They do everything, don't they, Bob? Is there anything they can't do?
Hang out in a desert. Because apparently you don't find them in warm climates.
So if you're looking to live a Wendigo-free life, you might want to move out to the desert.
Then you're dealing with skinwalkers.
Well, what would you take your chances with, Bob?
Probably the skinwalker.
Okay.
The Wendigo is not something to be messed with. Even the bravest of, you know, hunters out there probably don't want to encounter this thing. Not to mention the shape-shifting abilities. And did I mention that this thing can be 15 feet tall?
You forgot to mention that, Bob.
It could be 15 feet tall.
So if you're out there in the cold climates there up north, and you hear a baby cry or some weird sound that doesn't seem like it makes sense in the area you're in, it's probably best just to leave it be.
Yes.
Now, even if you don't go in there, though, trying to investigate, do they still come for you? Or do they, if they can't lure you in, do they still try to get you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they're hungry. Never-ending hunger. Hmm. However, there is one. There is a person who once lived by the name of Jack Fiddler. Also known as, I can't even begin to pronounce their native. I'm going to spell it for you.
Sure.
Okay. And I don't even want to, you know, try because I don't want to butcher this Ojibwe's, you know, name. ZHAUWUNO-GEEZHIGO-GAUBOW.
How would you even begin with something like that?
In basically it means he who stands in the southern sky. And they were this man was by the name Jack Fiddler. And Jack Fiddler was a member of the Sucker tribe, which is a offshoot of like the Ojibwe. And they were, and this particular person was a shaman and a medicine man, specifically a Wendigo hunter.
Hmm.
Like his father before him, Jack Fiddler became a famous shaman for his alleged ability to conjure animals and protect his people from spells. More importantly to the people of the region, he allegedly successfully defeated the Wendigo. And in his life, Jack Fiddler has claimed to have defeated 14 Wendigos.
Really?
Apparently, some were sent against him and his people by enemy shamans, and others were members of his own band who were taken with incestible, incurable desire to eat human flesh. In latter case, Fiddler was asked by family members to kill a very sick loved one before they turned Wendigo. And in some cases, the Wendigo, him or herself, would ask to be euthanized according to necessary rites. Fiddler's own brother, Peter Flett, was killed after turning Wendigo when the food ran out on a trading expedition. The HBC traders and Cree and missionaries were well aware of the Wendigo legend, though they were often explained it as a mental illness or superstition. Regardless, several incidences of people turning Wendigo and eating human flesh are documented in records of the company. Jack Fiddler's reputation also grew among these groups, and he was approached multiple times by Cree ministries in Island Lake asked to bring Christianity to his people. Though he respectfully heard the request, Fiddler did not convert. By the beginning of the 20th century, the Sucker people were among the only indigenous people in North America living in traditional manner, with almost no government imposition or legal religious matters. In early 1907, two members of the Northwest Mounted Police visiting Lake Island heard of Jack Fiddler's power against the Wendigo from Norman Ray, an in-law of the Fiddlers. Seeking to introduce the Canadian law in the North, the Mounties went to the Sucker camp at Deer Lake and arrested Jack and Joseph Fiddler for murder. Before leaving, they took an eyewitness and declared each man must give up any extra wives. For most of the Sucker people, the Mounties were the first, non-Indigenous folk they'd see. The elderly brothers were charged with murdering Wakasipi, Joseph's daughter-in-law, the year before. They were held at the Norway House to await trial. Meanwhile, newspapers across Canada picked up the story and printed sensational headlines of murder and devil worship. That just goes to show you, man, people that don't understand like traditions, even though they might be different, you can't just go off and start claiming devil worship. This is like these people's religion. This is what they did. You know, Catholics go to church on Sundays. These folk practiced and tried to ward off against something that they legitimately thought was a problem. Albeit it was a bit barbaric that they were killing people that they thought, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I'd lie in that spectrum. It's not the best thing. But at the same time, you can't just start going and accusing people of devil worship. That makes no sense to me, but I digress. Mm-hmm. On September 30th, Jack Fiddler pulled a D.B. Cooper in escape captivity during a walk outside and decided instead of being killed by his captors, he would take his own life and hung himself from a tree. Joseph Fiddler, his brother, was still sent to trial and unfortunately was brought to death. Jack Fiddler's son Robert ended up becoming the successor chief to the people, and that was the story of Jack Fiddler, Wendigo Hunter.
Now, before you mention, what was your method? What's the if you encountered one?
Shoot a lot.
And that would work?
No. Unless I have silver bullets.
Yeah, I was gonna
apparently, Lore Wolf Legend dives deep into this one. You're supposed to shoot it with a silver bullet, and you're wanting to try to get its heart out of its body because the heart is a beating piece of ice. And apparently, if you remove that and melt the ice, the Wendigo then dies with it.
So you gotta get it down first to do that.
And that's not easier said than done, man.
Can you get silver bullets at Cabela's or / the Bass Pro Shop?
No. But let me ask Dr. Ben Vanderson and the other hunter party from that group.
They might probably have some.
I'm sure they probably have some silver bullets laying around. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. You would need some in that line of work.
Yes.
Yeah. I would hope.
You ever see Monster Squad? I digress.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the Wendigo, Count?
Terrifying creature. Maybe up there, I would say top three most terrifying cryptids right now as far as...
I swear to God, if you tell me the old cat's scarier than the Wendigo.
The old cat is pretty scary. Oh,
okay, so what's in the top three? I want to know just out of curiosity. In your years of hanging out with me and you learning something every week, what's your encounters? What scares you the most?
Well, the Wendigo.
Uh-huh.
The Polish disco demon. Terrifying.
The best paranormal story that's literally like four sentences long.
And Johnny Appleseed.
Thanks.
But that Wendigo, from recent memory, Wendigo ranks up there as...
The public monster and the Wendigo are top two of my probably most terrifying things that exist apparently.
Because these aren't friendly creatures, Bob.
No.
No.
The Wendigo is a very angry, vengeful spirit, and very much, it wants to eat you. In popular culture, the Wendigo is also featured in things like Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
The, you know, thing that was causing the pets to be re-risen was the spirit of a Wendigo.
Yeah.
In the animated short series Beyond the Garden Wall, the main bad guy in that, also deer-headed, angry spirit creature, Wendigo.
Yeah.
So there's the Wendigo is a very popular figure amongst cryptids. And in fact, so popular that I had a chance to drink some Wendigo gin over the past weekend.
Now, does this come straight from the Wendigo itself?
No, it's come from a distillery in Pennsylvania. we'll talk a little bit about that because I'm going to do a video review of the Wendigo gin.
Gin?
Yeah, it's really good. The Wendigo gin.
Yeah. Yeah. Endorsed by Bob After Dark.
And we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Because sponsor us.
That's one. Put them on the list.
Absolutely. Somebody in the chat, Chris, says the Polish Disco Demon. You need to go listen to that episode.
There's a bunch of.
We had the top five. I can't remember. I think the episode was just called like top five, like quick stories about cryptids. And I swear it's 10:17, getting ready to sign off. I'm willing to bet that's Jack, because I don't think people don't call this late unless they're Jack.
You would guess right. It's Jack.
Hello, Jack.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Jack. What? How are you?
I'm pretty good. And yourself?
Oh, doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
The Wendigo is on my mind.
Ooh. Oh, what?
Like you knew this episode.
Hold on. Jack's about to lay down some knowledge that I might have forgotten my notes. I was skipping over to save time, or something I didn't even know about, because that's how Jack rolls.
Are you familiar with the death of Tim McLean in Canada?
I am not. So this is knowledge that we're about to get laid on by Jack. For all of you guys out there that don't know Jack, Jack is a paranormal enthusiast, investigator, and researcher out of Chicagoland. We had him on the show a few episodes back talking about Troglodytes, Crawlers, and the Rake. Jack,
so go back and watch that episode.
Yes, the episode podcast will be up here very soon. We get everything uploaded and ready. So get ready for that. Jack's writing a book about these crawlers, rakes, troglodytes, so we're excited about that. So if you guys don't know Jack, you should know Jack, because he's a great investigator and a fantastic colleague, Bob, that I'm blessed to call a friend.
Thanks, Bob. You too.
Absolutely. Let's hear about it, because I don't know this story, so I'm really excited to hear it.
Sure. So this happened in 2008, and I remember when it happened too, because it kind of like made the rounds online. So in 2008, there was a Canadian man who was traveling Greyhound, a 22-year-old kid, and he was sitting in the back of the bus, and another man, you know, eventually came on the bus in a later stop, and this was in Manitoba. And then so the man just kind of, you know, he got on, and he at first sat in the front of the bus, and then throughout the course of the traveling, at some point when they hit Manitoba, he walked to the back of the bus and sat next to this kid, Tim McLean, and very randomly he started to attack McLean while he was sleeping. He stabbed him, and he stabbed him in the neck and the chest. Everybody on the bus started screaming. The bus driver obviously stopped, and everybody ran off the bus. And the bus driver and another man tried to stop this man who was killing him. But the guy with the knife, kind of trying to slash everyone. So everyone at this point gets off the bus except for the killer and this kid. And what ended up happening is he locked himself inside the bus. They called the police. The police got there, and they witnessed him decapitate this guy. And he displayed the severed head to everybody while he was on the bus. Then what he does is he begins to eat the body, parts of the body. He begins to eat part of the face. And eventually he tries to make a run for it, and the police catch him, and they put him in a mental health facility. And this made the, when this was making the rounds online, a lot of researchers, one of them is Lauren Coleman, who runs the Cryptozoology Museum.
Yeah.
He has a blog called The Twilight Language. It's very fascinating. It deals with synchronicities and cryptids and all manners of the paranormal. And Lauren Coleman was really interested in the story. And he talks about how, you know, in that area, there was a high degree of Wendigo reports in previous times during the Native American era. And he talks about how, you know, there are connections between, you know, this incident and how people would become possessed by the Wendigo. And he doesn't outright say, but he does speculate, like, could this have happened? Is this one of those cases? Everybody who knew this like the killer, you know, as they usually do, right? They said that, you know, they never had problems with him before. He seemed happy. He was a married man. So they don't know what happened. He just kind of went berserk one day.
Wendigo psychosis. And,
something happened to him where he decided that he would, you know, sever somebody's head and begin to eat it. And, you know, it's, you know, my point is there's still possible Wendigo reports to this day, you know. I want to say possible because I don't want to, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, the guy's family is still living, so I don't want to, you know, anger anybody. But, you know, you do have to think about where it happened, you know, how it happened, the events that took place, the guy's mannerisms. And there's more details to the story that gets a little gruesome. I don't want to.
No, yeah, absolutely.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. And did you hear or see the video? I'm sure you did. This came out either last year, been probably 2 years ago, of the Screaming from the Woods video that the gentleman in Canada walked out of his front door and recorded. It was a pretty going viral, and this thing was like a blood-curdling, like, growl coming from the woods right outside his house. And it was, you know, went viral for a while, like I said. And, I mean, even things like that, and he was right in the prime area of Wendigo territory, so.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a couple other examples. I mean, I could, you know, be here for a while and give you some other examples in current events around the world about this kind of thing happening. And, you know, it does make you think, you know, could the Wendigo really be some sort of a supernatural spirit that, you know, takes possession of people. But on a more lighthearted note, there is a movie called Ravenous.
Oh, I'm familiar with Ravenous.
Yes, with Guy Pearce.
Yes.
And, you know, they don't outright say when to go in the movie, but, like, that seems like what's going on. So if you guys...
Woo, Ravenous.
The people who are listening, if you haven't seen that movie, it's really an underrated movie. So I would recommend it.
Yeah, well, Ravenous, Guy Pearce, check it out. It's a decent flick. Yeah. And Pet Cemetery, definitely the Wendigo.
But thanks, guys, for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Jack, thanks for calling in, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Sure. All right. Take good night. Guys.
There you have it.
Jack. Fellow investigator, researcher, good guy.
If you don't know Jack, you should.
You should. Count.
Yeah.
I think that's all the time we have for tonight.
What do we do now, Bob?
Same thing we do every week, Count. Say goodnight.
Very nice.
Okay.
We should end the show like that every time.
You know, editor note or notes, that's how we're going to end every week now. What do you got to say for our fans?
Bob. Again, as we head into where the veil will be thin once again for this holiday season, I want to thank everybody for joining here. And Bob, again, Thanks to you. Thanks to your mom as well, who had the idea. I will proudly wear Bob's gift next week on the show. So stay tuned for that.
Also, quick and slight surprise for you guys. An old friend is coming to join us in the studio very soon. That's all I'm going to leave it as.
Perfect.
Yep, we talked on the phone, and they're coming here soon.
All right.
Yep. Count.
More cliffhangers.
Cliffhangers. Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I want to wish you guys all sweet dreams, and to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, Mom and Dad, and remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.